Welcome to New Realities. This is Alan Steinfeld, and each week on this program, I investigate the latest in a spiritual revolution, how we're transforming as a culture, as a race, as energetic beings, basically. And I have two people that really address that in their life, in their work, in their art. I have Peter Kine with me, whose website is thehumanradiance.com. I have Young Jo G, who's an artist from Sag Harbor, New York, who I went and saw his art this summer. Really amazing. So we'll talk about perception, art, and how that changes consciousness. So thank you both for being here. Let's start with you, Peter, because you use these visual images to change the way people feel about themselves. Can you talk a little bit about what your work is like?
Yeah, I design images. Some of them are custom, that is specifically to a client I might be working with, but I've also designed some that are sort of general application, and they contain a variety of geometric shapes and lines, volumes, spheres, that kind of thing, that are that function really at the quantum field level in the light body, and they resonate with their higher blueprint. And in that resonating, they sort of reboot that higher truth for them. So my job is to be able to correctly ascertain what are the geometries, what is the sort of resonant code they need to help them with whatever intention they've come in with. So it's pretty fun because you never know exactly what you're going to need to come up with, so there's that creative element. Although I look at it more like tools than art.
Hmm. I see. Well, let me ask Young Jo about his art, and we'll get back to your tools. So with your art, Young Jo, you also have an intention. Can you tell us what that is?
Well, just from my personal level, my first interest in my art making when I was in Korea, when I was a 7-year-old boy, and my first project that I was involved in making crayon drawing was a Buddhist temple. And when I was inside a Buddhist temple, I noticed a certain Buddha composition that was Buddha and Bodhisattva anchoring on each side. And as I immigrated to the United States when I was 10 years old, I attended a Catholic school. Going from Buddhism to Catholic, there was quite a difference, and I wasn't able to speak the language at that point. But mm-hmm. when I was in St. Clement Church, the composition of the layout in Catholic Church with the crucifix, and there was three, the Trinity, it resembled something very similar way Asian iconography of the Buddhist altars. Mm-hmm. And in my mind as a child, I thought they were the same thing. And as I grew up, of course, learning the language and learning how to read and understand is a quite different thing that they were teaching about. But as I got older, I kept to that mind that they have similar link between each. And as I got my academic learnings, I got more involved in the history composition. And as what Peter was talking about, there is a geometric composition that's in Buddhist art to Paleo-Byzantine art in Christianity, or even Judaism or Muslim. And those are what interest me, in the geometric shape and what the composition of the work that looks. And the way I paint my painting is not like iconography of images. I just go into abstraction, but I use the composition to illustrate how I want to relate to the spirituality. So I don't have any set religion. I just paint to the spirit that I'm seeking.
Right, but what kind of effect do you want your art to have on people? What would you like them to have?
Well, my process is very intuitive. So the moments that I choose the color and tone, it's all from my intuition. And in the process, I do a prayer process. And prayers of a chance that I was taught by my grandmother, Nam-myoho Renge Kyo. Some of these are the words that goes to mystic law of cause and effect and love and compassion. I would write these in Korean And then I would go into gestures and I would translate them in English. And after it goes into motions of how my grandmother had a bead where they have count the beads when you chant, I would just make spheres and circles and over in repetition. And these are just processes I go through in my prayer, but I just transform them into the paintings. And
but something must be communicated, I feel, because you're putting that intention into the painting. Well, maybe Peter can talk about intention and design, because this is part of how you work, right, Peter?
Yeah, I think it's interesting because I also make some visual images that I consider, quote, art, as distinct from the lightware images that I make, and they have different intentions. When I'm doing my art, I'm sort of questing inside myself and maybe resolving dynamics inside myself and even my connection with some archetypal energies, and I'm sort of leaving a trail of that. When I'm designing something for a client, I'm specifically actually trying to read their field and what are the corrective geometries, shapes, resonances, colors that I see that they might need to move forward, to actually clarify or even rectify, align them. So, you know, it's the art is very different in that its purpose is more personal, where when I'm making tools, it's really specifically to hand something off to someone else to help them get down the road.
But I think the purpose of true art, and when people like Young Joe tap into this kind of super conscious or subconscious field, they're bringing through forms that are evolving us collectively.
Yeah. Yeah, I would definitely agree with that.
Do you agree with that, Young Joe?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, I agree with it because of these images that I was drawn to, I'm not exactly mimicking them. I'm just interpreting the images that were done thousands of years ago in India and going into Tibet and moving to South Indochina and coming all the way up to Korea. They have a similar form and designs and compositions that I interpret my own in this modern time and to create without any instruction. I mean, it's abstract. It doesn't have any images. But I think the emotional state of my mental consciousness of practicing this Buddhist practice is kind of translated into colors and forms. And visuals,
right.
And audience receive them without any instruction, but they're going to be left with a certain feel of the painting in their own psyche.
So they're left with a feeling, as opposed to what Peter's doing is more intentional. You are intending a result, as opposed to art, where the effect is sort of like on another level, let's say, right?
I think it's pretty same thing as Peter is doing. Just that I don't consciously say I want my client to be a certain way. I'm just expressing where I'm at this certain in my meditation, and meditation is just presented in the way the colors and the forms are shown in the painting as a value, and audience can just observing the painting, and if they're left with that feeling, and I did my job.
You know, sometimes I think that when I'm working with art, I'm sort of attuning to the larger cosmos field of information. Some of that might be ancient, and some of it might be new. And so for me, art is bringing in, like, both old information, perhaps, it's been resonant there, but maybe the new archetypal information that artists sort of are there attuning to that, whether it's Joe G pulling in maybe a little slightly different color, set of colors that he would associate with some of the Buddha energy. And in that sense, it's bringing in new stuff for everybody. You know, so you go to the gallery and you might be, everybody there kind of gets to have a little sip of that new information.
Well,
where if I'm doing something, you know, does that make sense?
No, it makes sense to me because I think what Yang Jiaoji is doing is evolving Buddhist art to the next level because he's filtering it through this present age culture and taking it to a new level.
Exactly.
That's what I think the purpose of art is.
Yeah.
I am influenced in Western ideals and Western religion because I grew up here and I went to attended Catholic school as my junior high years.
But you're also bringing in your own genetic, psychic, intuitive feel for you and your culture, your perception, all that.
Yeah, I do feel like I'm bridging the two cultures together, and that's what my aim is, to bridge rather than segregate. And whenever you become a bridge for a culture, you're uniting, and there is a spirituality just for people connecting and sharing their values.
I mean, I think you're bridging, but you're also taking us to the next level together because it's moving forward. It's not just...
Yeah, I have some of Young Joe's painting, and I feel it's like he's introducing me to that, to the Buddhist field, if you will, but he's also kind of carrying us up as well, like, as you said, kind of a higher, the next sort of comprehension of it that is maybe like the resolution of 2 points, but at a higher, you know, third point, you know.
I think that's the purpose of art, is to do that, to affect the subconscious so we can all open up to new ideas.
Yeah.
But in your work, Peter, you are specifically intending people to have a specific result, right? Tell us
about
it.
Right, I do a few different things. Sometimes I'll do what I call a little radiant life map where I'm literally looking into their specific future, and rather than being like a psychic that, you know, might give you a verbal, you know, like, oh, you're going to meet your dream date or something, I don't really work that way. I'm a little distrustful of that because I think people can psychologically attach to that kind of a communication. I kind of took my tip from the Dogon peoples who... they mistrusted language, and so they would encode things in little statuary or artifacts that then they would send the initiates off into a cave to kind of hang out with. So when I'm looking into to do a life map for someone, I'm making marks that sort of their higher self and unconscious could read, but their mental egoic mind would not, you know, understand necessarily.
Well, how do you tune into them? How do you tap that field?
Well, it's usually that takes, I need to work with them for a little while as I start to sort of quest or journey with them. It's an act of, I've learned somehow over the years and through certain processes, spiritual processes, to sort of awaken different faculties that let me read those data streams that are coming in. And you know, really, we have many futures already coming towards us that we are sort of living into. So I try to listen into what is coming from what I would call their best future, their the most divine future. Mm-hmm. And then I will see that. I can look at their current state and the dynamics going on in their psyche, mm-hmm. and what that best future will ask of them. And I just sort of I get my mind out of it, Alan. I just start making the marks and shapes, and then when I'm done, I hand it to them. And the remarkable thing is that they look at it, and I tell them, sometimes I'll hear, okay, I want you to look at this, work with this for the next 40 days or the next 3 months. And people will come and call me, you know, weeks later and say, you know, I loved looking at this thing, and somehow it would speak to them in a language that the higher mind could read and help them stay kind of right with the things they needed to do. Now, every once in a while, I do get some keys in English, as you know, I'm allowed sort of to speak something directly in English. But that really doesn't happen that much. I'm not trying to give that kind of a reading.
But how do we tap into that ourselves? I mean, you're leading people, but wouldn't it be better if we we're able to access it on our own?
Yeah, well, one of the things I do with my drawings and so forth is some of the drawings I have are specifically, like I might have a client come to me for whom bringing on that kind of faculty, that latent, you know, that perceptual, hyper, supersensory faculty, that it's right timing for them. So I'll do drawings that I can feel are going to help them bring that online for themselves. Because I'm much more interested in helping people become their true radiant selves and doing their highest and best work. I don't necessarily think it's true that everyone is meant to have those perceptual faculties switched on, because when they're switched on, there's certain responsibilities that come with that and even certain challenges that come with that.
Like what? Like what are you saying?
Well, I think that for me anyway, I just to maintain my work, sometimes I would be spending an hour and a half every morning breathing very specific ways to keep my mind clear and to keep my energetics grounded. And plus, when you start receiving information multidimensionally, quite frankly, it can be a little frightening because your perceptual boundaries and your sense of reality does really shift. And there can be periods of time where you're, well, like I said to my wife, I'm not sure if I'm losing my mind or gaining it. You know, it's
right.
So I, when I'm, and people have come to me even in spiritual crisis where they maybe went into some of this initiation processes too aggressively for their own energetic system, and they weren't able to ground it and be integrated in their life. In other words, they became, you know, non-functional. They became just sort of out there. You know, they couldn't kind of bring their consciousness into back into the containment of their ego mind in order to just walk down the street and go to their job and, you know, do their daily stuff. So I think everybody has a path within them, an evolution within them, and from one person to the next, it could be different. So I'm not of the assumption that everybody is supposed to become shamanistic, if you will.
I do, in a way, think we are here to evolve culture and reach a new potential.
Yeah.
What do you think, young Joe? Do you think that, I mean, how do you feel about that concept of evolution?
Concept of evolution, it's in a constant, I mean, it's a constant process of, if you're open to just about any culture that's different from you, or religion, or spirituality, if you just keep your thoughts open, and just letting it hear through your ears, even the different language when they're spoken to you, that you are in the process of evolving. Because, you know, I'm married to a woman who's from Bulgaria, and here's a Korean moving to America and living in Chicago and meeting his, you know, his mate in a dance club in the middle of Chicago Crowbar. And through just relating in the art and the language in her Bulgarian, I start to evolve just as myself, being in the Korean-American to the Eastern relations that are happening. And if you just keep yourself open to new things, you can constantly grow and allow yourself to change. And that level of acceptance is true compassion. And having that to be in your heart, that you, I guess it could enrich your life quite a bit more than if you just try to stay sane.
I know what Peter's saying, in the way that not everyone is ready for that opening and awareness, but I mean, my intention is to create a world where everyone is ready for that level of responsibility. You know what I'm saying, Peter?
I think that I would be. I think in general that's where we're headed, hopefully, anyway, as a species, that we operate more off what I would call the heart mind, and that we do avail ourselves to our higher capacities. I guess I'm just saying that it's a question of timing for some individuals and and even expression. You know, I believe in, you know, I've worked with people over 20 years now, and there's a lot of different, you know, there's astrological ways of understanding personality type. There's the Enneagram. There's the Myers-Briggs. There's any number of ways that we can talk about types inside of the human psyche. And I found that they're pretty compelling. That is, that you kind of, they're an archetype. You know, they give you a basic set of cards that you can work with. And yes, you can keep going up to your highest evolutionary state. But, and you become a contribution. That is, that some people are particularly like builders for, that wouldn't mean they aren't capable of higher compassionate consciousness, but maybe they also have a particular intelligence around building things, or other people are communicators and they have a particular gift in that area. So it's sort of like we all add in our special intelligence, and hopefully we're also all increasing our heart intelligence, so that we can really move past the sort of duality, us-them consciousness that has created a lot of the problems that we now are really facing, you know?
Well, let me ask you both a question about creativity, or maybe the difference between your different types of images. I mean, Peter, you make the images based sort of on tension, tapping in to the other person, as opposed to like an artist like Young Joe, who taps into himself, I would say, and produces images from the depth of his own psyche. Is that right, Young Joe?
Yeah, that's one of the kind of the work I do, but also with my wife, Anna Atanasova, you know, we met up to listen to electronic music in the nightclub, and I enjoy making art together by listening to electronic music, like Kandinsky. He listened to classical pieces, and he painted. And we tend to listen to music sometimes, and we just like the groove of the sound, and we create forms that express the way that we feel about the music or the rhythm of the music by creating forms and abstraction. So there's many ways to you could tap into your intuition and your subconscious state and have a relationship with your right side of mind to the left side, where left side would be when you're executing it and actually physically carrying out the linear process from the whole feelings that you get through your body and physical self and your emotional self.
So you're not communicating in intention, it's more feelings, as opposed to what I think you're doing, it sounds like, Peter, is like you are intentionally communicating a direction someone wants, but it's still coming
through. Yeah, well, there's a couple of things. Sometimes when I'm doing a very personal drawing, you know, then I'm referencing a person's specific field, but I've also developed these, what I call human radiance lightware. It's sort of like software for the light body. And those have in it what are more, what I call universal information patterns that address certain dynamics in every human being. So, for example, I have one called Power Up that deals with the solar plexus and the will body and your ability to direct your own energy, life force energy in your life, whether it's into healing or into intentionality to go get something done. And those geometries have a universal truth application to them. So there's a there at that point. But again, you see, it's very utilitarian. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And yet there's a universality to it.
I'm just wondering what would happen if you two sort of switched your ideas. Let's say Young Joe had an intention in his art to create a certain feeling, and Peter, you just did what came to you to do because based on your feeling. Is that possible, Young Joe?
You yourself, you make paintings on your own pastime because you're an artist.
Uh-huh.
And
right, I do. I have two worlds. I do my lightwear images for my clients, but then I also paint what I would call my arc. And when I'm doing that, it's more like what Joe is talking about in terms of his process. I'll put on music and some kind of a tuning. In fact, Joe and I have done a painting together in his studio. Remember that, Joe?
Yeah, we did in my studio. Peter and I painted together. And that was pretty much intuitive process. We just made it.
Yeah. And, you know, I think we hung it up. You took it to that, was it a hospital or a clinic or something?
Yeah, it was a neighborhood clinic.
And I think when we were working it, Alan, the intention kind of evolved. So we would take turns making marks, and the marks would have an impact on us, and then different colors, and we could feel when maybe the two of us, unbeknownst to us consciously, were somehow tuning into the home it was going to eventually end up in, you know, because it ended up being kind of a happy painting. That's
interesting, tuning into where it's eventually ending up. That's like a whole level of remote viewing and psychic awareness.
Exactly. And I think because I'm clear that when I'm doing my work and when he and I were working, we might say a few words to each other about it, but we didn't really know what we were doing. You know,
not at all. Like we were contriving and directing each other.
Yeah, and I think
contriving any kind of our future approach. I didn't say, Peter, I think you should do this, and after that, I would want to do this. We just let each other do the things that we needed to do.
Well, I think the best art has a mystery in it and an intention. I'm thinking of Leonardo da Vinci. You know, the Mona Lisa, John the Baptist, The Last Supper, they all have something they're saying. There's an intention present.
Yeah.
And there's also an open creative mystery in there as well. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. In fact, I think if it's too pat, it's boring, you know. And I think that something is speaking to the artist, whether it's, like I said, the eventual destination that this was going to end up in this kind of clinic. It was in a part of town that was kind of impoverished, and it didn't see a lot of bright colors or happy images. This is a pretty big canvas that we put together, and I think that it's quite possible that that eventuality, that future, was broadcasting into our psyches that guided us to make what we made. I completely believe in that there's dynamics, attractors, you know, broad futures that guide us, and or maybe our angels, you know.
And I oftentimes, I myself work with a client that I visit their home, and I visit their living space where they want to have a certain feel and ambience of what their emotion, and they kind of share with me the feelings they want to have in the space, including colors or form and shapes or values. And I just take in the information. And the funny thing about, you know, making paintings and abstract paintings for people is that they could never describe, or I could describe to them before, it's made like premeditate what I'm going to do. I can't make drafts of it, really. Mm. But usually when I make the work, usually works out for the people.
Do you feel like something's coming through you, Young Joe, and guiding you and directing you?
Yeah, usually when I'm with the client, I'm being in their living space, I can really get the feel for who they are. And it's working, you know, I become kind of a medium for them.
Right. And do you feel like you're kind of giving them where they are, the level they're at, kind of complimenting their level, or are you almost like Peter, and I think, is doing, intending to lift them in a way beyond their level?
Hopefully that I bring them into the place that I, like what you said, I lift them and beyond where they're at. But I absolutely have to be seeking to do that to order to work with me, because if they want to stay sane, they wouldn't want to work with me.
Because most people, a lot of people resist that, don't you think, Peter? If you give them something new, they might, you know.
Yeah, well, it's interesting. sometimes people will have me come into their homes, and I used to do like a color palette in their rooms, different colors. And one client, I said, here, put this color here and this color here, and she was very resistant. And I said, just do me a favor, just take this on a, 8 by 8.5 by 11 sheet of paper, this color, and just live with it for 3 days and then tell me how you feel. Well, she called me up, and see, initially it was her least favorite color. And she called me up and said it was now her favorite color. And, you know, it's almost like a remedy. You know, it's food. It's a vibrational. So, yes, I do think I try to find that. I think resistance is like, are they ripe and ready? And sometimes it's sort of shaken loose some of the debris or what I call their gremlins, you know, their fears or whatever, to go to that next level of aliveness, awakeness, of consciousness that this new color sequence that I'm giving them is ushering them into. Now, if I go, that's part of the art of it is giving them the right balance of what's going to be, you know, the gap, so to speak, that the gap is not too big, but it's enough to lift them or move them down, further along. But yeah, I've had clients have all kinds of negative reactions initially, and sometimes even ultimately I back off of it. You know, maybe I didn't do it quite right. But usually,
well, do you think all art is trying to do something like shift consciousness?
Well, I don't know if every artist is trying to do that, but I certainly, me personally, I think the general enterprise of art hopefully is functioning that way. I think it maybe even can't help itself, you know, that artists are almost, Young Joe was talking about almost like being a medium, you know, that artists have that function in culture to be bringing that new information and putting it in front of our faces, whether it's sometimes it's real direct, right, in sort of protest, you know, art that is really obviously graphically information about the culture itself, and then other art that's maybe doing the same thing but maybe much more subtly in terms of the content.
Well, I also want to talk to you both about states of consciousness. Like you said, Young Joe, you and Anna paint together the same canvas. Are you feel like your consciousnesses are linked somehow and you're in an altered state?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. It's like a dance. When you're involved in each other's dance, listening to music, there is a relationship. There's not only relationship on verbal level, but you're having relationship on movements. And once you get engage each other on in a process of painting, and the colors that she's choosing, and reacting to the colors that she's choosing and forms that she makes, and every information that I make, the gesture of strokes or colors onto the canvas, she's getting a message and information, and our psyches are becoming almost as one. And we drift into the right side of the mind. We're free. It's not the analytical side, but a more intuitive side. And there's a deeper relationship that form in that level than, I think, just in a verbal level.
So you're sort of merging your psyches in that sense, huh?
Yeah. You're becoming, in its essence, you're becoming like one unit.
So that's the part of art and consciousness that I find fascinating. Well, also, Peter, you told me the other day about that story where that opened you up when you saw that Egyptian painting. Could you tell that story? I think that's an amazing example.
Yeah. One thing I'll say before I go there, because you talked about in couples, sometimes when I work with couples, I'll make a couple marks and I'll have them make drawings. The only way they get to communicate with each other is through the drawings. And that's very interesting. They somehow access another level of themselves and the love they have. And it's does wonders sometimes in the couple session for me to just quiet everybody down and have them make drawings to one another. But
and then is there a merging there?
Yeah, it's very interesting. And, you know, they also know when they're done. Like they know when the one person needs to stop and then the other person's turn to make a mark. It's a beautiful thing to do. And sometimes I'll set it up a little bit. I might make a few little marks on the page to kind of open the field, what I would say open the field of what I think is up between them that they can't maybe name in language, but I can name it with a mark. And then I just let them go. And that helps them discover that capacity within themselves. And I usually give them assignments to actually talk to each other with drawings as part of their take-home assignment between sessions.
Oh, I see. To go home and talk to each other with drawings. That's great.
Yeah. And you'd be amazed. I did it with my father before he died. I've done it with my mom. And you'd be surprised the stuff, you know, that the resonance that gets put down in a mark or a shape, when it's been released, when it's been, go ahead, make it as a, let your subconscious, let your deeper heart self communicate without words and trust it, you know, and it's powerful. And it's also very exciting for people because they realize, oh my God, I do have this part of me, you know, that can,
this part that's an art creative part, you mean.
Yeah, and that can talk, that can access very intuitively some very deep parts of themselves and communicate it to their partner.
Well, that's why I think the value of art and people like Young Joe and Anna, and they're doing that, and they're showing, like, you know, creativity can speak to us in ways that are much deeper than language and words.
Yeah, exactly. And I think, you know, going back to the hieroglyphic thing, when it was many years ago now, back in 97, when I was in my office and I have these images from a tomb to a physician to a pharaoh. And the hieroglyphs there, you know, hieroglyphics are a mark, but they're also a resonant doorway, at least some of the marks are. And my interaction with the Eye of Horus, really, I just literally went into an extreme altered state.
Just by looking at the Eye of Horus?
Yeah, I literally, like, went into it, you know? I felt like I was like a vortex almost. And that was kind of a new experience for me, And I got down on all fours in the office, you know, fortunately my office mate wasn't around. I just sort of let myself go with it. And I felt these energies just, you know, kind of going into my head and through my eyes. And it was awakening whatever I was getting in contact. I found out later because I wanted to understand what just happened to me. I was doing more reading about the Eye of Horus and its connection to the archetypal realms, like time travel in the sense of connecting with the eternal archetypes. And so the Eye of Horus allows you to access that domain. And so as you go into that domain, that acts upon you. And I found that it was switching on some of these faculties that allowed me to do the healing work that I did after, where I could look at someone and feel their archetypal patterns and where they were stressed or imprinted negatively and where they were clean. And that really happened to me, at least in part, as a function of my interaction with those hieroglyphs.
Do you think the intention was to do that, shift consciousness, or was it that you just opened up to something?
Well, my understanding is that, and I'm not, you know, an Egyptologist or anything, but that a lot of the information in the tombs and so forth, and that they took that very seriously as not just sort of a record of events, but literally as alchemical communication, you know, communication that was meant to help. In fact, the whole job of the physician to the pharaoh was to help them not only get to their other lives, but choose which life they were going to go to and help them evolve their consciousness in a big way. So maybe, I'm not sure if it was just the marks themselves that had that kind of intent imprinted on them, and or maybe my own guides were working with me and kind of helped me know how to use those resonant glyphs to open my own mind and take me to those places. Does that make sense?
Yeah, because it gets back to what Yongjo's doing, I mean, and the Buddhists are. I mean, when an artist would make these statues of the Buddha with these beautiful presents and smiles, they have to be in a sort of state of consciousness, and then anyone looking at those statues would also, I think, be shifted to that state. Isn't that true of Buddhist art, Yongjo?
The art itself, I think it happens both sides with the Christianity and Buddhism, or in a shamanistic work. And the artistry has to be practiced in the consciousness of the practice, or it wouldn't work. I would think it would be kind of hypocritic art if you don't practice the work that you're making and the state of mind that you want to be evoking it in yourself to others, you know?
Right, so if you're drawing a Buddha, you're feeling the Buddha nature. Would you say that?
Yeah, absolutely.
So you're transcending. So, and then anyone looking at that is also able to be shifted in a way.
Yeah, and mostly when I'm actually in the process of making my work, it has a mini layering process. But by the time I get to have some forms come to me, I'm just practicing as a medium, and I'm kind of consciously choosing the colors and values. But it's not really like feel like I'm doing it. It's something more that I'm linking myself to. And I think what I'm doing is subscribing myself to that kind of channeling, that energy. And it works through me to find the right values and right colors and forms that I need to put onto the canvas. So,
yeah, I mean, I think that's a big point. I mean, what I'm trying to say is the legacy of art, I mean, from the Egyptian, let's say, and the Buddhist tradition is the legacy of consciousness, states of consciousness, and different innate subconscious realms that the human being has access to. So,
permanent. Yeah, it's like I think of art as in some way this placeholder of you can go to it, and it's both a doorway and a facilitator. It can be. I think it doesn't force itself. I mean, you could walk by a Buddhist statue perhaps and, you know, not be elevated. But I think there's an interaction that one has to bring to the art, to open to it, that it could do its work on you, if you will, you know? I think there's a dance between that. There's a co-created reality of my being and my being present to and allowing the presence that's embedded in that sculpture or painting
I agree with you.
What are you saying?
I would agree with Peter 100% because one of the job of the audience looking into so-called abstract painting, intuitive painting, you need to do just about the same amount of work observing it, much as a painter is painting it, to really process the work.
That's interesting. So what does that do to the observer if they're doing as much work trying to absorb it?
Well, it's a natural process. I mean, it's intuitively done, so you need to open up your intuitive psyche to observe the painting. If you're having a really tough day and your ego's full gear and your left side of your mind is on full drive and you sit in front of a pile of painting, you might think it's just a bunch of splatter paint, and you walk away upset that. And I've seen this in a museum because when I was at Art Institute of Chicago, I used to be a museum guide, and I've seen those people coming through and just saying, absolutely, what is that on the wall?
So would you tell people to approach an abstract painting? What would you say to them?
Well, it's like going from your office and straight, if you dropped off in Yosemite Park in San Francisco, you know, you might need to have a little bit of breathing room for you to change your attitude. You know,
right.
If you need to be in nature and observe the nature and not pick at it as if the flower, if the wind is blowing against the grass and what it's a function for. It's just doing its job. And sometimes you need to do the same thing. You just need to give it some room and not be so quick to judge and ask what it is. What is it?
But how do we go, let's say we're seeing an abstract form and most people don't know how to approach it. What do you recommend? How do we open our minds to absorbing what the artist is trying to communicate?
Pardon me, best thing I could say would be, don't try to bring the world to it. Don't bring what's existing already in this world to make an example for what you're looking at. Just sometimes let it be. Let the form be, not the thing that you're acquainted with, and the forms and colors to be just what it is. And accepting it in the first level and that level, you'd be less puzzled or you're less confused.
Well, I think that also gets us back into what Peter's doing with his images and saying, let yourself be absorbed by or absorb this form here.
I think, I just was at the art museum with my father-in-law, and it's interesting because we were looking at work that was done late 19th century and then moving into 20th century. And sometimes just to give a context that the world had changed, World War One and Two had happened, and people's response or ideas about beauty or possibility had been really altered by those events. And when you give people a context to see that perhaps the artist had a new enterprise, that beauty didn't, that they were exploring different things like in minimalism or something, that they had changed their interest of exploration. And then sometimes people, when you give them a few keys like that, can let down sort of their preconceived ideas about, what art is if they just, went to normal school and saw the David or the Sistine Chapel, and now they're confronted, with Saul DeWitt's, simple shit. It's like, what do I do with this? Once you give them maybe a little, maybe left brain context, then they can calm down their left brain and then step into the experience like young Joe's talking about, allowing themselves to just be present to the shapes and the colors and discover what that does, how that acts upon them or what they begin to perceive or what they begin to pay attention to is very different maybe than what they paid attention to in the Rembrandt. Maybe, though, because Rembrandt, did it all, but...
Well, no, but it's also letting these images change us, filter it into our psyche. Like you have to live with a painting in a way in order to absorb its content. You just can't glance at it.
I go back to it many times.
I would say it's similar to listening to jazz music with any lyrics. Like when you when you go see an opera. And you're sent to a direction to watch a story being told, and there's a storytelling. But when you listen to jazz music, there is a story being told, but not in literal sense in listening to the words, but to go to the feelings of the emotions that you get from listening to the sounds. And I would say, intuitive paintings are done like a jazz, and sometimes they have they have people playing jazz music in pairs, where they one plays, another one receives, and they react, and an audience is there to just watch the improvisation of it. And those are, like, for me, the best times that you could be with, because it's a kind of being in a living state of the art. You're living with the art.
Right, because they're tapping into that creative space and taking the audience with them into these other states. So what do you want? I mean, just as wrapping up here, Joe, what do you want people to get from your art? And also, do you have any shows coming up? But just tell us, what do you hope as an artist to achieve as you communicate with the world?
I just feel like I'm... like to be part of something that's out there to be creative and giving people access to have a creative mental space and their mind space. My art coming up, next show is happening in Scottsdale, Arizona, in Calvin Charles Gallery. It's in December.
Calvin Charles, you said, gallery in Scottsdale?
Scottsdale, Arizona, and it's on December 10th. And that's going to be with my paintings from the encaustic Buddhist paintings and also my paintings that I do with my wife, Anna Atanasova, with paintings that are done by music. And
great. And do you have a website as well?
Yes, it's Youngjoji Anna Atanasova .com.
Okay, I'll put that out. And then Peter, tell us your overall intention, and maybe a little bit about some of the sessions you give with people.
Well, yeah, my overall intention with people is that to support them in really awakening to that higher radiant self that transcends their physical and even psychological self, so they can really be a better lover in life, you know, divine agent of divine love. And sometimes that's in their relationships, in their right livelihood, in their personal expression or personal power and healing. I work with people over the phone some. I have clients all over, and also I'm in the Chicagoland area.
And your images are a big part of your work, it seems.
Yeah, I have on my website, humanradiance.com, you can go and see, just click on Human Radiance Lightwear. That's the tools that I make, and there's a whole selection there, and I've got a new one up. I just made a little lightwear pocket activator. It's just a small thing you can put in your pocket, but you can use it to switch on your higher intelligence for anything you're about to go do. It's really great.
Is that a new image?
Yeah, and I even have some free things on the site. You can try different resonant patternings and so forth. They're there on the site. So there's a lot to play around with. And I'll send you one, Alan.
I appreciate that. And
yeah, I'll send you a couple. I'll send you some pocket activators to hand out.
About how people can activate their own creative potential?
Well, I do think starting with your breath and listening inside, and really whatever really gives you joy, you know, be sure you do that in your life. Be sure you make room for creative play, whether that's doing a painting or cooking, you know, making a meal for someone or taking a run on the beach and just really playing softball full out. I mean, truly, whatever just makes your heart sing is what opens you. And you'll find your way to that you want to contribute love. You know, there's all kinds of forms of love.
And Joe, do you have any words about how people activate their creativity?
Just like Peter was talking about, keep the play living in yourself. Constantly play. It does. I really discourage people to make things art is work. There's a lot of things that's work, but not. I feel like if you make art into work, you're not really involved in the right way. And I wanted to go back to looking me up. Best way to look me up is Youngjoji, and you Google it, and there would be my website and all the galleries that represent me.
What is it, Youngjo? What?
Youngjoji, Youngjoji, and those are three words.
Okay. .com then, Youngjoji?
Just put Youngjoji in Google.
Thank you both. I've been talking to Peter Kine from the humanradiance.com, and he's located in Chicago, and Youngjoji, an artist from the Hamptons Sag Harbor. And this is Alan Steinfeld for New Realities. And if you have any questions about anything you've heard, please contact me at newrealities@earthlink.net and check my website, newrealities.com. Thank you for listening, and I'll be back here next week with some more guests. Thanks.